Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School, so listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. So Pete Markey is the Chief Marketing Officer of Boots UK. He's also been hailed as the best marketeer anywhere in Britain. So in recent years, he has won no less than five National Marketer of the Year awards. He's also president of the Voice of British Advertisers, ISBAR. So during a sparkling 30-year career, he has held senior leadership roles with more than half a dozen great British brands, including Boots, Aviva and RSA. He has a huge online following across most social media platforms, and he's lauded as one of the finest communicators in the marketing industry. He's also very popular among colleagues and staff with a sharp sense of humour. I know that he, in his spare time, he does a lot of comedy improvisation. In a recent interview, he recommended aspiring leaders read a book called The Art of Making Shit Up. So obviously we'll be fact-checking everything he says on this podcast. So Pete Markey, thanks very, very much for taking time to join us for this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Great to be with you, Mike. Thank you.
So before we start, it's probably best to explain that book. What is it?
So it's a great book by a guy called Norm Lavioletti, who studied improvised comedy and improvisation and then found a way to apply that into business. And I've been doing improv comedy for about 5 years now, and I sort of fell into it because my son's an actor and I wanted to do something that bridged into his world a bit, saw an advert at the station and dived right in. So for the audience, to be really clear, it's not stand-up. Stand-up is where you write a routine, you learn a routine, you perform the routine, you're on your own. Improvised comedy is you're always with at least one other person and you are making everything up literally in the moment. You're given a scene, a setting, a relationship, there may be a game or a construct of a game you're playing, but the whole thing is made up. So it fires all of your creative juices. Different bits of your brain start firing away and you're thinking of all this creativity. And then Norm Lavioletti wrote the book, realized, actually, well, in business, often we're not spontaneous enough or creative enough. And often what we do in business becomes quite rational and logical. So the book is brilliant because it says, actually, here's some techniques that you can apply in the business world where if we were all creative, more playful, more spontaneous, more willing to break rigid structures, we'd see more progress and more momentum and more growth in business. And I'm all up for that.
So that's what I was going to ask you. Do you find it's helped you in your leadership, your business career?
Definitely, yeah. It's funny. I never set out to do it for that reason. But I sort of started to realize, hey, this is a really good thing. And I was working for TSB at the time, amazing business. But when you work for a bank, you sort of become quite bank-like in your thinking. It's quite rational, financial, logical, you know. And I sit around the exec table and you sort of morph into this thing. And I think also when you grow out of childhood and adolescence, you become less playful. I mean, I used to write poetry and song lyrics, all sorts of stuff that I sort of abandoned when I left university. And this whole thing has brought me back to that world of creating and writing and ideating. And so, no, I found it incredibly useful to be more present, more spontaneous in the moment, to think of new and different ideas. But also, I think I feel a bit more sort of fun and playful with it as well, not in a disrespectful way, but it's allowed me to find, you know, to find levity in some situations, you know, where I've sort of needed that, you know, a chance to really, I don't know, bring a lightness of touch when you need it. But also, I think it allowed me to bring some more gravity into things where you feel like, okay, I need to bring something different here, which again, improvised comedy teaches you. The biggest thing overall it teaches you though is about picking yourself up from failure, because you know, about half the scenes you end up doing, you wish you could do better, if not three quarters. So it does that sense of actually it's okay to test and learn and fail and pick yourself back up again, which I think is a good guide to not everything always goes your way in business too, as in improv comedy, very similar.
Well, you mentioned your university, your own university career there at Solent. There is some phenomenal stuff online. You have such a huge online footprint. There's some phenomenal stuff, which you've obviously put up there yourself, stuff that you did when you were at university. I mean, I sat and watched a James Bond video last night that you did when you were a communications undergraduate in the 1990s. It was just fantastic. I mean, so when you started out on your career, what was your aim?
I tell you, Mike, you get a gold star for watching through that. It's a short film, that one. It won a Royal Television Society Award that back in the day. And my friend Edmund directed it, and I co-wrote and produced it. And I loved it. I played 004 in that film. And my screen time, as you saw, was very brief. But there are quite a few running gags in that around Blofeld, the villain. Instead of stroking a cat, he strokes a toilet roll and a coat hanger. That was my idea, to sort of weave in this very serious dialogue, but with absurd sort of footage. So I think, to be honest, being surrounded by such great people who are still really good friends now, who allowed me to be creative, spontaneous, and fun, actually, you're right, Mike, it's a good analogy. That I sort of rediscovered all that again when, I guess, 30 years beyond that, I sort of got more into 25 years beyond that, I sort of gone into becoming a bit too corporate. So yeah, it's been brilliant. Actually, Solent University was fantastic. I was there for 4 years, did a couple of different qualifications, and actually, you know, we were doing video production, we ran a radio station.
So you were an early adopter, weren't you, there?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I, it's funny, before I went to university, I wasn't really open to it. I wanted to be a journalist, but when I got there, I thought, you know what, actually, this wider communication mix is so exciting. And actually, when we started making adverts, and we had at least a couple of projects where we were running an advertising agency, which is terrifying, thinking about it. And I remember we tried to win the Volkswagen business and tried to launch a new car called the Euro, and I was the account director for that. And but the sheer experience of pulling a team together, running a pitch, you know, was just amazing. And that really is where my love of marketing really started. Like, this is really good. It's hard, but it's fun. It's good. And actually, you can get some really good work out of this. So yeah, I loved it.
So what do you know now that you wish you'd known then, though?
I think, I'll be honest, probably the biggest thing is to ask more questions, I think. I've certainly found, as I've gone on in my career, being more challenging and more questions is really important. And not, I don't mean, often challenging it seems a negative thing, but I think asking questions, clarifying things. I did a job pretty early on in my career when I worked for the AA I joined as a marketing comms manager. I was on a project connected with golf, and it didn't bode well, because I actually knew nothing about golf, which is always a good start when you're joining a business devoted to golf. And I started learning golf lessons, and I haven't continued that, shall we say. But I should have asked more questions around that business and the business case and what we were trying to do. And I sort of, you know, allowed myself to buy into the vision of it, which I did. But if I'd asked a few more questions, I might have thought differently about that. You know, and I think of a couple other things in my career where I've joined businesses. I wish I'd interrogated things a bit more. Same when I joined Aviva. But I don't, there's nothing in my career I regret, because you can't. And everything has taken me on the journey I've been on. But if I was to go back and have a word with my younger self, I'd say, you know what, when you reach this point, here's the six questions I'd ask, and then have a serious think or act differently in those situations. But often at the time, you're sort of carried along by things, aren't you? You buy into what you're doing, and maybe you don't stop and pause. So yeah, maybe a few more thoughtful moments I'd need.
Okay, but did you always know you'd be in charge? I mean, did you sort of have a pathway that led you to sort of think, well, just a minute, if I do this, if I do that, if I do the other, then I'll end up being the main man?
No, and it's funny. I get asked that quite a lot, Mike. And people say, "What was your master plan?" And I think someone else had a master plan, but it wasn't me.
Somebody else had a master plan for you.
No. Someone must have had a master plan for me, but I never sat down and wrote one myself. Till probably later on in my career, I found when I started out. I mean, I started. My back was, I finished university in Southampton, and I just need to earn some money. So I started on the call centre of British Gas, and I never thought I'd stay in British Gas. So I ended up staying in that business for 6 years, moving from local office to head office in a number of marketing jobs. I never saw that journey happening. And then it was only really when I got into More Than, when I'd left my gas and golfing and telecoms days behind me, that I got brought in as a second job as a head of marketing. And I got offered the chance to do an MBA, and the MBA was designed to parachute me into a marketing director job. And it was only then, when I did the MBA, and I thought, hang on a minute, I could take this further. You know, I really enjoyed being head of marketing. I was like, I can do this. And it was when I did the MBA, I think that increased my confidence, Mike. When I never saw myself being hugely academic. I'd done a number of qualifications. I'd done a Chartered Institute Marketing Diploma. I got my degree. I've got all the qualifications. But I never saw myself going back to academia. And when I did the MBA, and did all right in it, actually. I finished it with a distinction that still amazes me. Therefore I sort of finished my academic career then. I thought, I've peaked. I can't. So I said, do a doctorate. I'm like, no, I've peaked now. This is it.
So when did you peak? What age were you there?
Oh golly, that was I was like 34 or something. I was like, I peaked academically, I'm done. But then that increased my confidence. Like, you know what? I've done a course now. I've got distinction, and I could do finance, strategy, HR, IT. I can do all these things. You know what? I can do this. And then I came back in the business, and I was supposed to get promoted at the end of the MBA and end up getting promoted halfway through it. So I did spend the other half of the MBA thinking, why am I still doing this? But anyway, I loved it. But that increased my confidence. And getting into that, I thought, you know what, I could properly do this. And then the next big moment, I think, for me was when we used to have a group marketing director at Royal & Sun Alliance, owned more than where I worked. And I was running the UK. And she was brilliant, but she left. And the group CEO dropped me an email, Andy Haste, and basically said, you know, so-and-so's leaving. Yeah, we really like what you're about. What would you do if you took it over and you ran all of marketing globally? And I, oh golly, that's a heck of a question. So I that evening at home sat on my laptop and typed up two pages on Word and sent it back to him. And he's brilliant, but he's the kind of person that will he'll put comments on stuff. And he emailed me back the next morning with no comments. Said, I like it, just do what you've written. And so when you get that, you think, golly. So that was when I became CMO. I ended up I'd written my own job description and built a vision for a center of excellence that didn't exist beforehand. And that was another moment where I thought, you know, I've got through this. I've become marketing director. I've achieved stuff in the UK. I've now been given this gig that I've had to write my own job description for. Heck yeah, we're doing this now. And that, I think, is when the ambitious bit of me really kicked in and thought. And also, when you've written your own job description, you feel more than ever you've got to deliver this thing. I've written it down, now it's got to make it real. And I mean, I was there in that job for 3.5 years and loved it. But it's really at that moment. And the biggest thing, I think, Mike, that's helped me through all that is just being surrounded by some amazing people who believed in me, backed me. People like Andy. I worked for a brilliant guy called Mike Holiday Williams, who pushed me on and inspired me through my early insurance days and earlier than that. You know, and having people like that is just brilliant that back you. And I feel that sense now, or have for years, within my own team of how can I be that person to other people that inspires and moves them on the way that others have done for me. They've made a big difference in my life and career.
So you've had these role models, you've had these mentors. But what is the greatest leadership skill, you know, that you have developed in yourself that has been at the heart of your success?
I think if you allow me to go with two, I think they are connected. But the first is about being assertive. And I think if I started my career again, I would definitely encourage myself to be more assertive. Back to the more questioning bit we mentioned a moment ago. And I got, actually, early on in my career, I was sent on an assertiveness training course. I remember the year was 1997. And I remember it really struck me because I was always worried about sort of, you know, offending people and if I was too challenging, too questioning, and doing things naturally in my own style. And the assertiveness course taught me actually questioning and asking things is actually okay and challenging more. And I think that's definitely helped me in my style to do things more. And that's probably the connected second point, is doing things naturally that are right for me. So be more assertive, question, but also grab things, run with things, lead things. Don't wait for others to do it. Step in, and also step in when you see a problem. And actually, on the back of that course, something went. I used to look after the marketing reporting, my first ever marketing job. There was a job at British Gas, and I was looking after some very important numbers on gas and energy customer losses that we report to the regulator. And I spotted that something had gone wrong with the reporting one day. And I asked for the report to not go out, which was quite a brave move, because we were waiting for that report to go to the regulator. And I saw my boss, and he's like, what's the problem? And I explained it. He said, well, okay, well, let's investigate it. And we stayed in the office till midnight. I remember we had pizzas in, and found that the report had gone wrong, and it duplicated itself and basically doubled up the numbers. Now, if we sent that to the regulator, it would have been quite a big fine. But that for me was a big moment of, like, you know what, I could have just sort of waved it through and thought, I'm sure it's fine. But I stopped, paused, questioned it. And that was a big lesson, that assertiveness of going, I'm not sure this is right, actually saved my boss some big embarrassment and saved the company a fine and saved a whole bunch of hassle. And all it took was staying in the office. And we've got free pizza, so what's not to worry about? So that was a big moment. But then the bit about being natural to yourself is, I think I always felt that when it came to being assertive or challenging, I suddenly had to turn into this large sort of ogre type figure of, like, oh, it's not good enough. And I've learned that actually, with being assertive and questioning, I can do it in a very natural style. So hopefully hearing that, I'm a really positive, upbeat person pretty much all the time. But what I've learned is if I want to show perhaps I'm less happy about something, I can dial certain other bits in. So, you know, a few years back, with one of the agencies, I had a moment where I just wasn't happy with the direction some creative was going in. There was a moment in a call where I was able to say, it came to me, what do I think? And I just paused and went, you know what, I'm not really that happy. I'm quite disappointed that we haven't been able to fulfill our original vision for the work, and then just paused. And I remember the guy from the agency word for word said, we don't like it that you're disappointed, not happy, Pete. And therefore, and then we radically changed that, and we end up in a brilliant place. But I didn't need to go, oh my goodness, what is this? Or, you know, I didn't need to, my natural style to say, look, I'm sad and I'm a bit disappointed. And all I needed to say was that. And so I've learned that you can be assertive, you can be natural, you can be challenging. You can do all that while also being true to yourself and your values. And that's probably the biggest combination of things I've learned within, I guess, the DNA of what I'm able to bring to businesses is how all that stuff can largely work together.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA. to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. You make it sound quite thrilling. You make it sound really quite, you know, wow, you know. You know, as I say, most of what you do, when I hear you speak, you say, you know, I spend my time thinking, yeah. Is that part of the leadership thing? You know, the thrill?
Yeah, it is actually. I wake up every morning, and I'm not trying to make this a cliche. I love what I do, and I love what I get to work on, particularly working with Boots. I love Boots as a brand, and I feel that weight of responsibility of, I'm in a business now that's 175 years old, and at some point I will be a footnote in this brand's history. My job is to catapult this on for the next 175 years, and eventually I'll be a sepia-toned photo in the archive that we have in Nottingham, and that's okay. But I absolutely love what I do and love what I get to do. This week we're going to be filming our Christmas ad later this week. You know, we filmed a beauty ad a couple of weeks ago. I get to work with amazing people and agencies. I genuinely love what I do. And I also think that, you know, I genuinely think marketing could be a real force for good. I feel like I'm in a business that's doing good, and I feel I'm in a profession and industry that can do some good too, whether it's advancing diversity, equity, inclusion, or telling a really positive narrative, or as we found with Boots, genuinely saving people's lives through health checks or vaccinations. I feel like this is a really exciting business to be in, but also there's never been a more exciting moment to work in marketing too, and I feel that.
So why is that? I mean, you use this theme a lot in stuff that you put out there, as I say, across your online footprint, this force for good in business. Why is that important?
I just think we're being very deep for a minute, Mike. We're only on this earth for a short period of time, and I honestly think I was able to do something at Solent University recently, and I went back and they asked me to give a little talk for 3 minutes, and I'm not trying to sound morbid, but I said, when I'm dead, yeah, no one's going to be gathered around my tomb. Says not going to say, God, he did a cracking Christmas ad in 2022. You know, that on it, people, and no one's going to say that while they're eating cold sandwiches, remembering me. That hopefully what they'll say is he used the time he had to make a difference and to make things better. That's my hope. And so I live with that huge sense of legacy hanging over me, Mike, of that I'm here for a short period of time. I've got to use my life for good. Yeah, and I get a lot of that from my mum. My mum is sadly not with us anymore. My mum was wired that way too. It's like, let's make an impact, make a difference, help people, transform things, make things better. Because otherwise, I think, why are we here? You know, we're here for a short period of time. We've got to leave things. We've got to leave the companies we're in, the people we interact with, the world we're in, the families we're in a better place than when we found them. That's got to be our mission. I think that's what legacy is ultimately all about. So that's what energizes me, Mike. Almost a sense. Every day I feel like I'm running out of time. So therefore, actually, how I use that time becomes really precious and really matters.
And is that why you've worked for, I think, at least 9 big companies, big brands, big gigs? I mean, you obviously feel the need to keep moving. Are you innately restless?
I can't sit still. That's definitely true. And I drive.
Yes, I'm sitting watching you doing up and down on the screen.
Members of my wider and immediate family mad. It's like you know, I remember being on holiday with my daughter recently. She's like, you just can't sit still. Like, no, I can't. I just really can't. I've always got something to do. But I am restless. But I guess I go where the opportunity and the challenge is. And the shortest I've stayed in any job is a year, and those jobs are jobs I probably enjoyed less. But there's been quite a few years since those. I tend to stay in places at least 3 years. I've now been in Boots, over 3.5, and absolutely loving it. So I think if you find you're in this place where you're making a difference, you can keep learning and growing as a person, you keep advancing and changing things, and then stay where you are. It's only because I've sort of either thought I've done enough, or I've had another challenge that's more interesting. I've gone, oh, that's quite exciting. I could go in and make that difference. And I love really knotty challenges, Mike, because pretty much every business I've joined, I knew nothing about the industry before I came in. When I went into insurance, I knew nothing about insurance. Same in banking, same in retail, same even in telecoms. And I've gone in and learned an entire business. And I've loved that challenge of, sort of a business burning platform is often when I get asked to come in, we've got to fix this problem. And the chance to come in and learn something I know nothing about is so exciting, exhilarating. And often, when you get approached about these jobs, particularly in retail, people say, oh, you need X number of years experience. Well, I walked in with pretty much 0 years experience in retail, and I've learned it and done it. So I think that hopefully that's a testament to anyone else who is in marketing to go, you can go to any industry and make a difference and make an impact, regardless of your background and where you've been before.
Do you think that all good leaders have this constant need to refresh themselves?
I think if they haven't, they should. There's something I think particularly in marketing where, and you'll know this as well, Mike, but the industry we're in is changing so fast. I mean, I look at when I started my career, the internet was just about starting, which is amazing to think about it. I got my first mobile phone 2 years into my job, and I thought it was this amazing thing, like the size of a brick, and the iPhone arrived many years later. And you sort of go, the world has moved on. Influencers have exploded, particularly in beauty, TikTok over the last 4 or 5 years. Ways to measure, Snapchat's come back. We thought Snapchat was over, but it's back, and that's exciting. And so things are moving on at quite a frenetic pace. And therefore, you've got to, I think, keep evolving, changing and learning to stay relevant. And I think relevance is a key word. It's a key word for brands, particularly in retail. We know brands that like Debenhams and Woolworths, brands we used to love, even Blockbuster Video, things that were in our lives that aren't here anymore that became irrelevant. And so my challenge for Boots is that we want to continue to stay relevant, and we are highly relevant. We need to stay there. But then also as an individual, I think to be useful and to keep businesses move on advance, we've got to stay relevant, keep evolving too. The core toolkit of marketing has remained unchanged and shouldn't. The core fundamentals are the same, but the channels, the tools, the capabilities, the things we do, how we measure things, are constantly moving on. So I think that sense of restlessness is really important, that sort of hunger to keep learning, keep wanting more, especially as you get more advanced in both life and your career. The danger is you get stuck, you sort of tread water. I never want to be that. I want to be always at the cutting edge of innovation and pioneering, because that's what keeps the brands I work for relevant, and hopefully me relevant too.
I keep on talking about your online footprint. Normally I do these interviews and I go and I look online and see what there is, and there's normally bits and pieces about the person I'm going to interview. But with yours, I was there a week. It was literally unbelievable. And as I say, I'm not blowing smoke at you, but a lot of it was really interesting, but really diverse as well. Lots and lots of different material. So, and from it, I could tell, look, you're very generous with your time. Obviously, you're a big believer in paying it forward, helping future aspiring leaders, future marketeers, business people. And is that because you are successful and you want to give something back? Or is this one of the reasons why you're successful? You do this and therefore it snowballs.
Oh, God, that's a great question. I've really never analysed it enough before. It's just wired within me. I think partly because other people have done that for me. So I've learned it's almost the parent-child thing. I've had great leaders who've inspired me this way, and therefore that's become part of who I am. So it's definitely something in there. But also, naturally, I think it's really important to just help each other out. I think it's part of being a human being. But again, I guess a lot of that goes back to my mum, I think, around the way she was. I think that sense that we all coexist, and you've got to help other people get on is really important for me too. But I also think there's a bit around, I think the whole saying about what goes around comes around. I found in my career that you bump into a lot of the same people. I mean, the key lead at the creative agency we work in, WPP now, was the account director when I was in my insurance days at a different agency. And we hadn't seen each other properly to work together for already a decade, but we picked up where we left off. And I know he's a great guy, and hopefully he feels the same about me, and off we go, and we're working together. You know, even in businesses where I've enjoyed it less, I've walked away at least knowing if I bumped into anyone again, they'd know that I'm hopefully an okay person, and we can have a chat and a laugh and a drink. And I felt that about every business I've been in. And so I think that sense of sort of pay it forward, yes, but also people knowing that you're a decent person who they'd want to work with again is really important, because this is a small world, this industry. You never know who you're going to need to call up and get a reference from or help from. And I genuinely feel that sense of sort of I'm helping other people. And, you know, because one day maybe I might need the help as well. And I found that a couple of times where within my network, you have someone ring me up for advice on something. And then 6 months later, I think, oh, golly, I'm going to call you back because I know you can help me with this advice on this thing. So this sense of sort of, you know, pay it forward, but also you're sort of building your own community, your own support network where you help them, they help you. Da, da, da. I mean, it's just in little ways, just particularly, you know, the marketing industry is like therapy, isn't it? I'm really struggling with measurement. Who can I ask about measurement? I need an agency who's going to help me with this thing. Oh, I know someone can help with that. It's really important. And people will pick up the phone more readily because you've done that for them. They've done that for you. And that's really, I think, to answer your immediate question, I think that sense of having a network is probably the bit that's within it really important. It's very important to have a connected network in the business you're in, but also outside it. And marketing is lovely for that. I know so many heads of marketing directors, CMOs, industry leaders, as a result of building that network. And then you always know who to pick up the phone to when you've got a difficult or challenging question. It really helps.
Okay. So as you know, this is a pod for the Nottingham Business School. So what one bit of advice would you offer to leaders, aspiring leaders, students, academics, people at Nottingham Business School, future advice, one piece of advice for their future leadership careers?
I think, come back to some of what I said earlier, I do think it's a bit about being assertive, confident, believing in yourself, but not in an arrogant way is really important, particularly early on in your career. You know, don't feel afraid to reach out, push boundaries, open doors, because you never know where they might lead. And also be authentic to yourself in doing that. Be assertive, push those boundaries, be yourself. And I think that bit around just be a decent person. I think it's a really funny to say, because it's a bit like, I remember when I worked in banking, you know, some banks have values like, you know, be honest or something. Like, if you weren't an honest bank, it'd be difficult. So it's a bit like a no shit Sherlock moment. But I do think there's a bit of like, be decent, treat other people well, look out for people, look out for one another. I think is so important. This sense of, I got actually Justin, who I referenced earlier on for WPP, who I'd worked with before, said about a year ago, he said that empathy is my superpower. And I'd never seen it that way. But I think this bit about being empathetic and relating to people and being a decent person and being understanding and supportive of people, I think is really important. So do that, be assertive, be yourself, and keep pushing.
Assertive and empathetic, Pete Markey, Chief Marketing Officer, Boots UK. Thanks very, very much for joining us on this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with the CMO of Boots UK, Pete Markey, why not listen to previous conversations with the former CEO of ASOS, Nick Beaton, the MD of Xerox UK, Darren Cassidy, or the CEO of Capital One UK, Lucy Marie Hakes. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced and edited by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.